You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. This is episode number 5 of the Calc series. You're hired. How to fail to be rejected during the interview process. So this is the last episode of this first season that I'm doing together with the PSI Calc team. It's a lot of fun. And hopefully you enjoyed all the other episodes already. If you haven't listened to them, just go back in your podcast player or on the streaming that you're looking to it in Spotify or whatever, wherever you are listening to this, and search for the other really informative and nice episodes that we already did. In this episode, you will get lots of actionable advice in terms of what to do about your CV, what to expect from the interview, and also some really practical tips in terms of what to do and what not to do. And you will get that both from people that have gone through these interviews, from both sides actually, sitting on both sides of the desk, being interviewed as well as interviewing people. So look out for this really nice episode. And if you want to find more information, just go to theeffectivestatistician.com/student, where you will find information about this episode as well as on all the other episodes that we have for this Calc season. Next week, of course, we will have another regular episode, and stay tuned for this. So now we are in episode 5 of this series that we're doing together with the PSI Calc team. And today I have two members here from the Calc team. First, Rianne, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Very good. And we have Rachel as well.
Hi.
Very good. So, as a start, maybe you can first kind of introduce yourself a little bit, your role, and especially kind of what your experience as an interviewer is, or actually as an interviewee. So, because I think that's a really nice thing today, we will talk about it from both sides, kind of what people that sit on the, that come as a job applicant, but also those that actually have the jobs and what they are looking for. So maybe we start with Rianne, with you.
Okay, so I've been in industry about 6.5 years now. I've had 2 jobs during that time, and I had done a placement year as well. So I've had about 3 interview experiences myself. One, for the placement year, one for the graduate role, and then one for 2 years into my industry experience, switching jobs. In terms of how sort of giving interviews, where I work now at a pharmaceutical company, I was involved in for about 3 years in the placement interview scheme. So I have a good idea there. Then I got involved in the graduate interviews, and in the last year, the more experienced, I'd say, those applying for a graduate role up to about having 15 years experience.
Okay. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, and Rachel?
Hi. Not too dissimilar to Rianne. I've been in the industry a little less, so it's coming up to 4.5 years. And that's been a mixture of CRO and pharmaceutical company. So I've had a number of interviews myself, ranging from a few graduate applications and then a more senior role more recently. In terms of experience as an interviewer, that was mostly at a CRO in the graduate application process.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, actually, I'm started in the industry in 2002, so quite some time ago. A little bit.
You so, have a lot to add to this.
Yeah. And yeah, so I went to a couple of interviews at that time, and then I switched companies again 2 years later. That was actually a funny process. I was called whether I'm interested in a new job, and then I had that interview, and I thought, I can't just have one interview with a company and then go for it. I need to have a little bit of a selection. So then I send out quickly some other CVs and get some other interviews just to get a little bit of a choice. So that was a nice story. And then I was actually 15 years at that company. But you know, in 15 years you can have ups and downs, and sometimes I was looking for other jobs during that career, and that was always really good to kind of validate yourself a little bit, to test your market, and also to not get, let's say, out of this habit of applying. So I think that's an important skill set also, that you, let's say, know how the process works, you get, you know, have a little bit of a self-validation throughout your career. So it's always good to do that. Sometimes it really helps with your self-worth as well. So okay, and yeah, throughout this career I have done lots of job interviews from the company perspective for all kind of different roles. Okay, so Rachel, if you get first a CV and a first time an application, what's your first thing that you're looking into? Rachel, maybe you can go first.
Well, Rhianne and I were having a chat earlier actually about a CV that we got through at our CRO that jumped out at me, in that they were a keen baker. And we knew straight away that we knew they were a good person for the office. So I think when you look at a CV, it's, I guess you want to see the person that they are underneath all of the, you
know, personality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And kind of showing who you are as a person rather than academic results,
yeah.
I think.
What was the first thing you are looking for?
I was going to say, for me, it's not just the CV, but also the cover letter. I would say the cover letter is as important as the CV. Not all applications come with a cover letter, and it's hard to get that personal side through without it. Sometimes you do find the CV is quite academic, experience based. I think it's another opportunity to show yourself and sell yourself with a cover letter. So I have found in my experience, those that come with a cover letter are the stronger candidates and more likely to get selected.
In the cover letter, what specifically do you look for?
So the first thing that stands out to me is I can tell when it's a generic cover letter, when the person maybe has done a final year, they want a job. They're not quite sure even which industry. So it's very generic, and it could be sent to me, you know, in the pharmaceutical, medical sector. It could be sent to a banking group. There's not much there to demonstrate to me they specifically want this role. So I would say make it, tailor it to the organisation, so be specific to the company, do your research about the company, get that out, why you want to work for that specific company and the industry. So that is the one thing I would say stands out instantly, something that's specific versus generic.
I think for me the passion needs to come through that.
Yes.
Through that. So are you really passionate about working in the healthcare sector? Are you passionate about improving lives for patients? So is that something that is important to you, or is it just a kind of generic job? You know, getting some money to make a living. That's, I think, is an important thing. It's something that you want to spend a lot of your time in it. So you need to be sure that this is really your passion you want to pursue. And if it's your passion, just write about it. Okay. I think that's important.
I'm glad you raised that point on passion. I have to say, the most memorable ones, you know, we do get a lot of CVs and we do bring in quite a few candidates. And I do remember even going into this, the interview, oh yes, this is a person. I remember their CV. They were very, very passionate. Even things like listening to this podcast, for example, demonstrates they've gone to the effort to find out more. Anything, you know, any research, bring that out. Those are the ones that have stood out to me.
Yeah. Okay. Any other things that you look into the CV?
Yeah, so a few points, I think, on the CV. Remember, we do get a lot of CVs in. We don't necessarily have a huge amount of time to go through them all, so it's got to be quite punchy. I don't want to see an essay. I'd say 2 pages, absolute maximum. We have had brought in plenty of people. That's just a 1-page CV, because everything on there is what I want to see. So don't think that more words you put in there is going to be more effective. That's not true. So I would say make sure it's well written, well structured. There have definitely been times I've picked one up and it is like an essay and I don't know where to start. It's an immediate negative point.
Yeah.
You don't read it.
No, it needs to be tabular form.
Tabular, concise. So I'd say typically the structure, you know, usually you start with your name, your address, perhaps a photo like you've mentioned. Usually it's a very short personal sort of profile statement. So I'd say 1 to 3 lines max. Again, make it punchy. You would have a section on your education, you know. Here there are differences. I think when I applied, I even went back to my GCSEs, which now I think was a bit of an overkill. I don't tend to see that, and maybe that space would have been better set for work experience or something.
Absolutely. Any work experience is great. Yeah. Any, especially as a graduate, any work experience is good.
Yeah. So I think the education section, you know, you could fill that up quite a lot, but I don't know how necessary it is.
Yeah.
Maybe most A-level, don't need to go back to your GCSE or equivalent where you're from.
I might even just limit it to the degree.
Or just the degree. Yeah.
And then that focus would be fine. On the work experience.
So. Yeah. But also kind of any extracurricular things would be good. So if you, for example, ran a student association or something like this, or let some other kind of voluntary work, and that was, you know, you had a impactful role there, that's always something good to add.
If it's in your CV, be prepared to talk about it.
So as an interviewer, I usually, before the interview, I grab the CV, and I know that's what most people do, and have a quick review, and then just mark a couple of things that you want to talk about.
Yeah.
So your CV is basically the trigger for your interviewer.
Yeah.
So be prepared to speak about specifically each point you put in. And that, I think, is already a good filter to what you want to put in.
Yeah.
So if there's something that you don't want to discuss in the interview process, well, then it's probably not relevant. Mm. Yeah. So let's move on. Now you have sent your CV, you got a call from the company or an email that they want to further talk with you. What's, in your experience, the next step then for the, in how does the interview process goes from there? Rachel, what happens in your company then?
So thinking back to when I applied for a graduate job, I received a telephone call from the careers department, and they invited me to a graduate assessment day at the CRO headquarters, and that consisted of a whole day of different events. So it was for a graduate statistician role, and there was a number of other applicants there, I think about 12 potentially, and throughout the day they rotated us through individual interviews, a couple of tests.
What kind of tests were these?
I'm trying to think now. So there
were these kind of psychological tests?
No, or? They were more, so one of them was focused on detail. So I think there was a communication email focused test. So you would have a scenario and you would reply to someone regarding that scenario. And the other test was more kind of logic and programming based. It was all, they were both written, so there was no programming itself, but it was kind of to flow through the logic that you would expect to see in a program in SAS. So they didn't expect any kind of prior programming language experience.
It's like if else scenarios, so it's like if this is the code, what would be the correct answer, like what would it select? So
yeah, definitely. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
And then I also had to do an within the interview there was a presentation that I had to do, which was prepared for in advance. So I think it was, thinking back, about 10-15 minutes presenting a statistical topic of choice, and then the interviewers would then question me about that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was it. There was also a group activity as well. So the day was very, very busy and very tiring, but you could see throughout the day they were trying to test different elements of the job, your communication, you know, your technical ability, and team building.
Okay. So you didn't have any pre-screening interview?
It was CV based, but there was no telephone interview, but I do know that other companies
I've always done that. So the first filter after the CV is a short screening interview where you would talk with one person over the phone or over Skype, and 1 hour interview basically.
So who would that normally be with? Would it be HR?
No, that wouldn't be HR, that would be actually probably a hiring manager.
Mm-hmm.
That would do the screening interview. And for you, Rianne?
So maybe I'll start off with experience when I was applying. So this was, 2012? And I know things have changed already since then. I think actually it was a little bit easier when I applied. So we, at both companies, one was a CRO and later the pharmaceutical company, both were pretty similar in that I had a competency HR interview to start, which is, you know, give examples of when you worked in a team, give examples when you worked under pressure, to type timelines.
Your strengths and limitations.
I think they did ask, what are your strengths and limitations, or give three words to describe yourself, like that, asking why you're applying for the role, what interests you about the role, even open-ended, tell me about yourself. And then that followed by a sort of technical, sort of statistical interview, I would say both again quite similar in the questions, even though, you know, I was 2 years more experienced the second time. They were still fairly okay questions, standard.
Standard interview questions that you would get generic from any HR person around the world.
It wasn't HR, it was a statistician.
Oh, okay.
Giving both those interviews. Actually, so in the CRO, I was applying as a graduate, we did have a test as well. So in my case, it was, they showed me, it was a piece of paper with, it was like basically an Excel printout. It had rows of data, I can't even remember what it was, blood pressure for patients, something like that, with column for age or gender. And it just said, how would you analyze this data? I had a treatment group as well. And are there any problems here? So picking out things like some age was missing sometimes, or some of the blood pressure results was missing. So just picking things out like, okay, missing data might be a problem here. There was some abnormal results in there, like an age of, I don't know, 102. Pick out a data error problem. Something fairly simple, that's just testing, you know, your attention to detail, I guess.
Yeah,
that was me as a candidate, and now the other side giving an interview. I mentioned, I think the process has changed now. It's gone a little lengthier, and in that now, you'd still have your HR interview, you'd still have your statistical interview. Now also, you'd expect to have a presentation on a statistical topic. So I think that's a new one.
Yeah.
The test isn't always done. I would say those the times they've been done is when we've run an assessment centre where we are doing a recruitment style event. We're bringing in a lot of candidates and we can accept one or two. Then we would run a group activity and a logic test.
Yeah, I've seen these level of detail tests quite a lot. I noticed that colleagues gave out kind of tables and with arrows on it, and then they asked the applicants to review the table and find all the errors in it. And these could be, you know, typos in the header or the footer, or, you know, incorrect labels or whatsoever, all kind of different things. So that's a nice thing to prepare for and be aware about. But I think the presentation is probably one thing that you can best prepare. Because I think that is where you can also differentiate from lots of the others, how well you are presenting. And it will help you anyway in your career to invest a lot of time in your presentation skills. So if you have opportunities at university already, really invest in that, try it, and get a lot of feedback on it, and so that you're really, really familiar with the topic and absolutely can do that, you know, wake up 2 a.m. in the morning and then you can give your presentation. It needs to be that kind of good, because when you are actually there, you will have a lot of stress. And if you then have your first couple of sentences in your head and you can directly start with that, that will calm you down a lot. Because then you have, you know, the most stress is at the beginning when you give your presentation. And if you then get into the presentation and you get into the flow, you have your confidence, and then it runs smoothly. And then you can also confidently present. So the most important thing is really this first minute of the presentation. If you can get that really good, awesome.
Yeah, I think one piece of advice I'd say as well, that we're looking for, sometimes we have very technical interviews. We have asked, it's on a statistical topic. But what we're looking for as well is, can you communicate it? You know, we necessarily don't even know the topic ourselves. We might not understand it. And so we want to see, can you break it down, simple terms, make it easy to follow? Sometimes they've been very, very technical, load of formulas. and not really understood it. Really think about that piece, because when you're in your job role, you're going to need to communicate to non-statisticians, or possibly, you know, teach other statisticians, but even then it needs to start off quite simplistic. So don't get too bogged down into the detail and try and make it complex. Do the opposite. It might be a complex problem, but simplify it.
Yeah, and also in terms of the, you usually can choose a topic.
Yes.
So choose a topic that you're comfortable with.
Don't choose
one thing that where you think that's a stretch for myself, but I really want to, you know, impress the people. That might easily backfire, because you could easily have someone sitting there that is, you know, has 30 years of experience, is really, really good on that topic, and ask you all kind of detailed questions, and then that can completely backfire, and I've seen that. And so better you choose something that is maybe not that fancy, but where you can shine through from a presentation point of view. Okay, in terms of confidence, I think the start of the interview is really, really important. And I can tell you a quick story about one of my first interviews that I had, and I was not planning well for how to get to the company, and I arrived there really just on time. And I was completely stressed out, and I really learned from that. Yeah, plan a lot of buffer into it. If it's a longer drive or something like this, maybe consider to arrive the day before.
Yeah.
I think that takes so much of the stress out of it. Prepare everything that, you know, that all these other things are really kind of okay, and come, you know, half an hour early or something like this. But you can spend maybe the last hour in the Starbucks next door or something like this. But make sure that you're arriving in a relaxed fashion. That's one of the key takeaways from my career and my experience. But Rianne, for you, what's this kind of, in terms of going through the interview process, what's really important from you there?
I think talking about the confidence is a good one. So, especially with graduates, I expect they're going to be nervous. It'd be unusual for them not to be. Sometimes they're very, very confident, and that could work against them as well. You don't want someone quite arrogant coming.
Surely not arrogant. Yeah.
So don't worry about nerves. You know, I've been very, very nervous when I've been in for interviews. But try not to let it get the best of you, in that you're struggling with your answers. You're coming across very, very shy. Your answers are very short. You're not really elaborating as much as you could. I think trying not to be nervous throughout the whole interview. So what I'd say is expect the initial question or two for them to be nervous, but hopefully, you know, that's part of our job as interviewers, try and relax them.
Yeah.
I'm not here to grill you. I want you to do well.
Yeah.
I really want the best for them, to give them the best chance. So, you know, I think we do try and help them relax into it. So I think, you know, if they're nervous throughout the whole entire interview, it can be a little struggle sometimes.
So Rachel, what's your experience in terms of the job interviews?
I think one of the main things I try and focus on when I'm nervous in a job interview or even in an important meeting with high up management is to remember that they have been in your position before. They've had their first interview as a graduate themselves, they were probably very nervous, and knowing that they don't want you to fail, they're looking for someone that will fit into their company, and equally you're there to try and understand whether you're a good fit for them, and
or whether they are a good fit for you.
I
think it's kind of, you know, it's you want to sell yourself, but the others also want to sell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it really needs to be fitting both sides. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go into the interview and say, well, I hope this is right for me, but maybe I find out this is not the right place for me. That's also okay. Yeah. So go with that confidence into the interview. Any other things, Rachel?
I think we mentioned earlier that obviously there are a lot. There's still a huge need for statisticians in the industry, and remembering that, I guess, like you just touched on, companies are trying to find as many statisticians as they can, you know, and it's almost the ball is in your court, in that if you might walk away with more than one offer, and it's finding the place that's most suitable for you as well, and remembering that it's an interview for both you and the employer.
Yeah. Rhianne?
I was going to touch on the confidence side, and that it's working both ways, that we want you to do well. So I gave two interviews last week to graduates. One I was in the technical, so the stats interview, one I was in the competency. And, you know, there were times where there was a bit of silence, they were struggling a little bit, but we were there to try and guide them. And don't panic.
Yeah.
That's what I was. If you can't answer a question off your throne, just try as best you can not to panic. And we try as well to ease that situation and, you know, like I said, guide or talk through, probe a little further. Sometimes it may be they're kind of talking around the topic and trying to hit it on, try not to waffle too much.
Yeah.
But we find ourselves doing that, you know, I think, okay, I think this person knows the answer, they're not quite hitting it or saying the exact point I want them, so I'll probe a little bit. But take it's a good thing, don't necessarily take it as a bad thing. It's our way of wanting you to get to the right answer. And
if we
think you can, then we will do that probing.
Yeah, and if you're kind of stuck for a moment, just, you know, say, sorry, I'm just stuck, can I just start again? That's completely fine.
Yeah.
So don't try to freak out in these kind of situations. The other thing is, if you get really nervous, and these days are really long, so and very often you will have back-to-back interviews, sometimes just taking a break at the restroom is completely fine. Yeah, just for you to relax, get down, think about your strengths again, and then off you go again. So that's really important.
And with that, you know, if one hasn't gone as well as you hope, don't let it affect the next one. Because, you know, we've had candidates that maybe were slightly weaker in one interview, they were very strong in the second, and we liked them, you know. We can forgive certain things, so don't rule it out. And I'm just thinking of one graduate interview I'd done. It started reasonably well, actually. Really, really liked the person. Quite a strong start. But then there was a question that threw them, and I could see they just panicked. Their facial expression, they just weren't expecting the question. They tried to answer it and waffled a bit and kind of went into a bit of a wrong direction, and I was really hoping she'd come back on track, but unfortunately I think they panicked a bit too much and let it affect the rest of the interview, that it kind of went downhill. And I was gutted, I was really gutted. I would just say if there's a question, or even a whole interview hasn't gone out as well as you wanted to, don't let it affect the rest of the interview or the next interview.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing is, these are always learning experiences, and if you can influence it, first interview for those positions that are least interesting for you, because then you can use them as kind of training for those that you really want to get. That's, I think, my thing. It's kind of, there's always learning and experience from it, and there's lots of zeros, there's lots of pharma companies out there. this, you know, constant posting of things on social media and on the PSI homepage where you can look for new job applications. So don't panic that this is your only choice, yeah? And that is a, you know, you must master this. Of course, do your best, but don't think this is the one and only option. So maybe that also gives you a little bit of a relaxing time.
Mm. And not to be disheartened, I guess, if you don't get your first interview.
Yeah.
Don't get the
placements. I didn't get the first two, actually, and I was pretty gutted. But yeah, I did get... I think sometimes things happen for a reason as well. The third one went very well. I think I definitely grew on the first two experience. In hindsight, I can see where things weren't perfect. but it's history and, you know, it really doesn't matter now.
Rachel, any other topics that you want to cover?
I guess we could go through some do's and don'ts during the interview. So I know there's we covered quite a lot of do's previously, but I guess
the don'ts?
Yeah. We were talking about being confident earlier, but also you want to get the balance of not becoming too familiar, as if you're friends with the interviewer.
Yeah, be professional.
Yeah,
I think this be professional is really important.
Yeah.
So also kind of appear professional. So no flip-flops.
We had a guy come in with trainers.
Wow.
It wouldn't rule that out at all, but it's something we all noted. And in a debrief, someone said, "Did you notice that person was wearing trainers?" It's just something,
yeah,
a distraction that's maybe not needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really come across as professional, even if you kind of are the most relaxed person in the world. That is a professional interview. So appear professional.
And there's loads of tips online about what to wear, what not to wear, you know, don't wear heavy perfume, don't, you know.
One don't I'd say is don't try fudging your answers. If you don't know the answer, don't try and make it up and waffle your way. I would more appreciate just a simple, I haven't covered that yet, I haven't studied that, I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually a complete fine answer. I would rather have someone that says, I don't know, than that kind of make something up. Completely agree.
It's very obvious to us when we don't know it. They tend to waffle a lot, talk around a topic. There are examples when someone has talked at length and I've still not really got the impression they know the answer and they've just wasted 10 minutes of the interview time.
Well, 10 minutes where you could have told about your strengths.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that continues throughout your career, though, doesn't it? I think you soon realise that statisticians, you don't know everything and you can't possibly know everything. So you might have strengths in certain areas, but it's okay, even in a meeting, to say, you know, well, I don't know anything about that topic.
Of course. And there's definitely been interviews that I've been in as a candidate and haven't known the answer. But again, don't get stressed out, just say calmly, I don't know the answer to that question.
I've
not covered it.
Okay, Rhianne, Rachel, that was an awesome discussion about how to go through this interview process from the CV up to the end of the interview. And then, you know, just one thing, you can always follow up with especially the HR person and, you know, send some nice email afterwards saying, thank you, that was really nice, something like this. That is always a kind of good thing.
And feedback.
Yeah,
if
feedback.
If it's not gone your way, ask for feedback.
Yeah. So if you get turned down, then always ask for feedback. Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much. For any further information, of course, check out the Effective Statistician homepage and there you can find further links and everything else. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. So with this episode, we conclude this season of the PSI Calc podcast. And let's see what the future brings. For sure, you will get another episode next Tuesday. So watch out for that. That's another regular episode of the Effective Statistician. So thanks a lot to the Calc teams that worked really, really nicely together to make this happen and to have these really, really nice episodes coming out. If you enjoyed all of these episodes, or maybe just one or two of them, please tell your colleagues about it, tell other students about it, and please also share it on social media, on LinkedIn, whatever, where social media you are, because this will help others find these podcast episodes and also learn from it. And you can, of course, always find more news on the effectivestatistician.com/student, and maybe you listen to one of the other regular episodes that's coming out. I'm pretty sure there will be lots of interesting things for new starters there as well. So thanks a lot and talk to you soon.